Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Tim Dalton, who's Procurement Manager at Lean Logistics. And today we're going to talk about three ingredients for transportation procurement success: loyalty, partnership, and collaboration. Now, you know, transportation procurement, especially this time of the year, is always a hot topic. You know, a lot of folks are planning for their 2017 budget, transportation budgets. You know, they might have concluded a transportation procurement engagement, or maybe they're getting ready to conduct one, or somewhere in between. So, you know, this is always something that's top of mind for a lot of executives. And, you know, certainly Tim is always in the front lines of this, year in and year out. And as the transportation market changes, you know, a lot of times, so there's the approach that you have to take. But there's always some, you know, foundational best practices or leading practices that, that companies need to be thinking about. And, you know, it's always good to kind of, you know, focus in on those. And that's going to be, you know, part of what we're going to talk about today. So, you know, Tim's been on the program before, so it's great to welcome you back in the program, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, so Tim, before we kind of, you know, dive into the, you know, the specifics of the topic, I thought it might be good to kind of get an update on the transportation market. I mean, what are you seeing and hearing from, you know, the shippers and carriers today? And then, you know, so how would you characterize the market?
It's in a state of flux right now. I'd say that that there's change that's occurring, but there's still opportunity. I'd say there's pockets of capacity that's tightening. You know, I know specifically, you know, I've heard recently about, you know, Indiana and Tennessee reefer capacity as an example. So I think there's more pockets than what we've seen in the past. I think right now with this time of year, with Thanksgiving next week and Christmas right around the corner, you know, I think capacity is going to be a little bit tighter this holiday season than it was probably the last two holiday seasons. So there's still opportunity. People are still going out to bid right now. I know my team this past year, I think we bid out approximately $1.8 billion in freight. Saw a fair amount of opportunity for folks. Saw a lot of shippers really making award decisions based on, you know, how you'd like to see them make award decisions, where they were taking more of a long-term approach versus trying to go more so with the low-cost solution type process or approach. And I think that if anything, you know, we've seen shippers leave money on the table in order to really protect the incumbent carriers that they're working with. But, you know, right now there's still some opportunity. We're sort of starting to see it tightening. Everything I'm seeing or hearing right now, people continue to suggest that, you know, as we get closer to December of next year, 17, with a lot of the looming regulations that are out there, you know, that capacity should only tighten and rates should go up. But, you know, right now I know working with a guy internally, he always judges the market based on if a couple specific carriers are always calling them looking for freight. And I checked with them this morning and they're still calling. So there's still some opportunity out there, but probably not what it was a year ago.
Yeah, you know, I've been to a lot of conferences this year, and obviously this has always been a hot topic of conversation. And I think what I've been hearing is kind of a lot of what you said. I think I think it was just recently, even in the Wall Street Journal, you saw some articles with some of the carriers, you know, reporting their financial results, and some of them kind of still taking trucks off the road, right, as a way to kind of better align, you know, demand with capacity out there. So I think the you know, absent some kind of shock, whether, you know, some unexpected economic growth or some other thing on the negative side, I think my perspective, which sounds like it's the same as yours, is that, you know, there's this gradual tightening of the market, and you know, certainly the expectation is that perhaps by this time next year the market will be, you know, materially more, you know, tight than it is, you know, today. But like everything else in transportation, it's always a question mark, right?
Absolutely.
You never know. So let's get into the topic then. And I guess, you know, the title has ingredients. So let's use a kind of a cooking analogy, right? You know, before you cook a meal, you have to determine, you know, what ingredients you need, right? And how many people you're going to cook for, and maybe what side dishes or sauces you need to prepare, and so on. I mean, is there an equivalent, you know, process or approach companies should take before engaging in a transportation procurement engagement?
There is. Yeah, and I like that analogy. It's definitely one way to look at it. But I think that, you know, I'd say when looking into the market or looking into whether you think you want to go to bid, you know, some of the things I think that you need to do to prepare for that is really just really start try to understand what's going on in the marketplace. And it's not only to benchmark yourself and to determine whether there's opportunity or not. That's important. But almost more importantly is what it does for you as far as communicating expectations internally. You know, I've seen in the past where, you know, folks will go out and say they're going to save X, and, you know, there really wasn't any science behind, you know, with how they came to that number. And, you know, I think the most successful folks are those folks that do their homework ahead of time, that communicate clear expectations internally. And by doing so, when you're going through that awards process, at times it'll help, it'll put you in a better position to make better long-term decisions than trying to try to hit a number because you've already communicated it. So I'd say understanding the markets, making sure that you're setting realistic expectations or options internally, determine your goals, but almost more importantly too, as you're preparing for it, you know, take a step back and look at yourself, think back to conversations you've had with your partners before. You know, is there anything that you know about your business today? So whether it be lead time or delays at facilities or whatever it may be, to really take a look at yourself first and understand what are some of the challenges that you've heard from the carrier community and see if there's any opportunities to make some corrections to that. So you can communicate some of those changes prior to going out to bid. So if anything, you don't have folks, you know, building in some of those inefficiencies into their rates or problems that they have with working with you into your rates, or also any new carriers that aren't familiar with your business, they're able to put in realistic pricing because, you know, they're pricing on something that is efficiently run.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think the, you know, really clearly defining, you know, your goals and objectives, I think is, you know, it seems like a no-brainer, but, you know, it's amazing sometimes how companies in the rush to, you know, try to capture some savings, you know, are kind of maybe so hyper-focused on a very narrow scope that, you know, they fail to kind of take a step back and really put this in a broader perspective in terms of, you know, what they're trying to accomplish as a company overall, you know, and not only in the coming year, but perhaps even, you know, more longer term, you know, strategically and putting that in that kind of perspective. So it sounds to me that that's certainly a key piece there. The other thing I like that what you said is that, you know, there might be things that, you know, people always like to focus on the numbers, right? Whether it's certain metrics or financial targets, but there's also a lot of qualitative bits of information that come into it, right? That has to get factored in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's with that, and, you know, sometimes you're only going to really know that some of those items exist if you ask the question. And I think that it all kind of comes down to, you know, who you're engaging in that process as well internally, you know, to make sure that you're fully capturing all that information. And, you know, I think typically there's two groups that at times are easy to ignore or to not include in the process, and that's more your operations team or your load coordinators. So I think a lot of times, you know, for one, once you've gone through the process, you've made all your award decisions and you want the ultimate buy-in from your team, it's better to engage them early on. But almost more importantly is to make sure that you're engaging them. You're presenting them with the lanes that you're planning to go to market with. So they can either, they can have a voice and they can either come back to you and either say, you know, provide you with, you know, certain lanes that they wouldn't bid out for whatever reason. You know, that they might be able to call out some specific lane nuances that the carriers need to be aware of before pricing, what the requirements are, what the expectations are, you know, what a carrier should know about a lane or facility. You know, and I think if you involve them in the beginning, you know, one, you're making it so they're part of that team, they're part of the solution. Ultimately, you'll have a better procurement event because it's going to have more of those nuances documented. So there aren't any surprises after you've made your awards. And once a carrier starts hauling the freight, they come back to you because there's a lot of other things that they weren't aware of. So I think overall it helps you to be a lot more successful. That's one group you definitely want to engage. I think the other group you really want to engage too is your system administrator group. So if you're using a TMS, if you're using a system, Who is that person that manages that system? Because what I've seen in the past is you might have someone when they're going out to market, and even how they might structure their lanes, where they might say, okay, we want to get region type pricing, for example, whereas regions may not be set up in the system. Maybe you don't have capabilities to run regions in the system. Maybe there's a lot of other work to make any background changes systemically in order to support regions in that example. So I think the more that you engage them in the process ahead of time, they can provide insight as to what would be the best way systemically to handle it. Or in the event that you want to get region price, for example, and the system's not necessarily set up for it today, you've communicated that early on, so then that team, that group has the time to make the appropriate adjustments. So when it comes time to actually awarding the freight and ultimately getting those awards into the system, they're ahead of the game. They're not starting from scratch. And if anything, you're not delaying the process. You're not delaying the effective dates of your rates and commitments. So, there's a lot of planning ahead of time. And I think that you need to know the information, you need to understand your business. And at times you can only get that by asking, but it goes much deeper than that. And it also will then ultimately provide you with some success as far as your overall buy-in, as I mentioned. And, you know, it could be the difference of, you know, having a coordinator tendering a load out to a carrier that they've never worked with before, who is primary, and that carrier doesn't take the first load offered. And right out of the gate, all they're going to tell you is that this carrier is terrible and they want to go back to the one that they've always been working with. When in reality, maybe there's a system setup issue. Maybe the dispatcher at the carrier wasn't aware of the award that was committed to. You know, there's a lot of other things. So the more that the people are all bought in, they're more willing to make that phone call, you know, to kind of give someone an extra chance to dig into an issue a little bit more versus just coming out and declaring that a carrier is terrible.
Right. Right. No, great points. I think it never even occurred to me, or, you know, as you were saying that, it kind of makes sense really to include kind of the system integrator. I mean, the systems person, as part of the process, particularly at the front end, as you were talking about it, because, you know, a lot of times as you kind of gave examples there, you know, when if they're involved at the back end, you know, after the fact, you know, that can create some friction or some delays or some challenges, you know, at the back end. So I thought that was a good point there. You kind of touched upon a little bit about what I was going to ask next, which was, you know, you ultimately reach the point where you have to kind of put together the RFP. You know, so you talked about, you know, some of the people that should be involved in that process, you know, at the front end. I mean, are there any other key ingredients that should be part of the process in terms of putting together that, you know, that RFP?
Again, understand what your goals are and kind of ultimately, what the makeup of that end result is. So it's not necessarily you're setting what that end result is in the beginning, but if anything, you have a strategy, you have a plan, you're thinking about, you know, whether it's the asset brokerage mix that you ultimately want to achieve, the number of carriers that you want to award. It's just doing a lot of that planning ahead of time, because it'll save you a lot more time on the back end when it comes time to awarding. And then it'll also help you. So if you, if it's someone who is working with a procurement type tool, or they've developed a database to do some of the analytics, it'll save time on that back end. So as they're getting ready to conduct some of those analytics, they already kind of know what scenarios they want to create or what scenarios they want to run in order to get them close to what that final result would be. So then they can go through and, if anything, just do the fine tuning from there. But yeah, I mean, the more that can be done upfront and ahead of time, you know, it'll only save a lot of headaches on the back end.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, great advice for a lot of things, right? I mean, if, whether it's sports, whether it's in the sports world, the business world, effective planning up front, that certainly goes a long way toward, achieving your goals and objectives. Kind of moving forward with the process, you know, the challenge that many companies have is, you know, analyzing all the information that comes back, right, from all the carriers, you know, to determine what the best course of action is. I mean, what are some leading practices, you know, in this area? And is there a framework or a set of guiding principles that, you know, companies should follow?
Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of data that comes back. From a best practice standpoint, and I'm obviously maybe a little bit biased, but I think, using a procurement tool is always helpful. You know, if anything, anybody that's run procurement events in the past and they've done it the old way where, you know, you send out a spreadsheet to 150 carriers and you get 125 of them back and every single one of them is different because no one followed direction and they added columns or, you know, they submitted their pricing differently than how you asked. You know, it can take a good week or so just to normalize the data to even get to the point where you can begin analyzing it. Plus, if anything, it kind of opens the door for mistakes to be made. So I think from an overall best practice standpoint, how to really manage all that data, you know, whether it's a, you know, a database that, you know, you've developed in-house or whether it's a system that specializes in procurement, you know, I think the more that you can include that technology and systems, the better you'll be because you'll spend a lot less time trying to normalize the data and you'll have more time to actually focus on the data and making the award decisions. So I think those are the big things right there. And I think too, when looking at the data, you know, obviously rate's important. And one of the very first things we said in this conversation was, you know, making sure you understand the market and you're setting clear expectations internally. So rate's always going to be important. But service is also important, at times almost equally important. So it's making sure that you have the structure in place. So as you're going through that awards process that, you know, you can kind of walk that fine line between cost and service. So you're ultimately making the best decision for your business. But yeah, again, to your point, there's a lot of data. People can still have success with using a system, but I think from an overall best practice standpoint, the more that someone can engage or use a system that's specific towards procurement, they'll find that it makes their lives a lot easier.
I think the other, aspect of it, I mean, I think you highlighted one of the advantages, which is, you know, you want to have kind of try to standardize as much as possible, you know, the data collection, you know, process so that you don't spend, as you said, you know, inordinate amount of time trying to normalize the data, clean the data. You want to spend more time actually analyzing it, right? Than trying to get it all clean, if you will. I think the other aspect of it, and I think you just touched upon it there at the end, was obviously cost and service are two of the key metrics that you look at. But a lot of companies also have different business rules that they may want to apply, right? In terms of perhaps giving a little bit more preference to incumbent carriers, or maybe they've got some policy in terms of working with X percent of minority owned carriers. Or there might be, some green initiatives that they have. So, working with carriers that have demonstrated, action in that front. So I think one of the key things is also from a tool standpoint is the ability to analyze the data, kind of this whole area of BI and analytics. It kind of provides that more level of sophistication in terms of the analysis, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not all rate, just rate. There's a lot more that goes into it. And, a lot of times, sometimes folks will go and want to run one scenario, one low cost scenario, and they're fine with that. But, we also see a lot of shippers who want to run, 10 or 20 different scenarios just to really understand, kind of where their costs are and, where those opportunities are coming from. You need systems, if anything will help, getting you to ultimately what that final solution set looks like. But, one of the things too, when we're talking transportation, we're not procuring out jars. So it's not that we're setting out a spec and everybody's coming back, with their proposals, and, the product itself is all the same. Transportation, when you talk about systems and everything else, they're necessary, but transportation is still one of those areas that are still very relationship driven. It's really understanding who are those incumbent carriers, what are maybe some of those additional services that they provide that you may not get from someone else. And it's really trying to layer in, everything, before you make that final award decision. And again, it goes back to what I said previously, as far as making sure that you're including the appropriate people in the solve. So you're not in a silo making the award decisions and then forcing it down someone's throat. Where it makes sense, the more that you can include the operators, warehouse folks, or what have you, you know, they may not necessarily agree with every award decision that you've made, but as long as you've given them the voice or a voice, they're more willing to, it's more likely that they're going to go that extra mile with working towards, you know, the awards that were made and really work probably a little bit more to ensure that, you know, they are picking up the phone and calling the carriers if they need to, and they're doing what they can to ensure that that the folks that are taking the freight are those folks that that truly are.
Yeah, no, great insight there. You know, I think, you know, for a lot of companies, you know, they may view that, hey, you know, once the all the bids are back in, they've made the awards, that, you know, that the process is done, right? And in many ways, that you can say that's almost just the beginning, right? So I think that's one area where you know, a lot of companies kind of drop the ball, if you will, is kind of, you know, say, hey, we've wrapped up, it's a done, the project is complete, and we're done here. But let's talk about that a little bit. You know, ideally, you know, what actions should companies take after, right, the procurement engagement is done, you know, moving forward to kind of ensure, you know, that they're going to achieve those objectives and goals that they set up, you know, at the onset.
Yeah, you're right. That's just, that's when the work begins, you know, is after you've made your award decisions. So I think that, you know, once awards are made and you've communicated somewhat a number of, you know, what you anticipate based on the awards that you've actually made, you know, at some point you're going to be held to that number. You're going to have to necessarily speak to why you're doing better, or, you know, maybe why you're falling short. So you need the visibility, you need the management of that back-end process. One, you need the buy-in from your team, you know, but I think that, you know, probably some of the best practices that I've seen in that area is, rather than just sending awards out to carriers, a lot of times shippers, even before the awards are made, you know, they may send out kind of an earmarked award list first, just to give people an insight as to what they're planning on awarding them. If anything, to give the carriers an opportunity to review and allow them to come back and say, you know, actually this lane isn't going to work for me. So then you can go back and re-award it. But you've given the carriers the opportunity to weigh in first before you just send it out, which is also usually helpful too, because if you just send it out, chances are you've already then updated your system. And then as changes are coming in after the fact, then you're going back through and there's a lot more system maintenance that needs to be done. But I think it's given the opportunity for the carriers to maybe see what their earmarked awards are first, to allow them to truly commit to get with their operations team to make sure that they can handle it. With new carriers, it's always a good opportunity to set up those calls or have meetings with them, just to make sure that everybody is aware of the expectations, and leaving those meetings everybody feels comfortable with the partnership moving forward. But again, after the awards are made out, the systems are updated, and you know it's day one of pushing that button to tender a load to a carrier. At that point, you're going to need you need visibility. You need to understand, you know, where your routing guides are working, where they're not, which carriers are taking freight, where they're not. So you can proactively reach out to those carriers and make sure that everybody's on the same page. Also, I'd say it typically works out well that once you've made your award decisions, you know, whether it be for the first month, first 6 months, whatever that may be, you know, if you want to take your top 15, 20 carriers or 10 carriers, whatever that number is of those folks that received the largest award, and maybe you set up a quick, you know, biweekly or monthly call with those carriers, just to make sure that, you know, everybody's doing what they said they're going to do, that the carriers are taking the loads that they committed to, that they give the carriers an opportunity to speak to what are some of the issues that they're seeing. You know, is also in lead time an issue that they didn't know about ahead of time? Are they having problems with the warehousing? Are there problems with how the appointments are, you know, are set, whatever that may be. It's never a situation where you want to come down and, you know, meet with your carriers and say, you know, you, why aren't you doing this? It's all about the approach a lot of times, and it's the right approach, but you need to really look into it and say, you know, this is what the data is telling us. This is where there's opportunities. You know, what can you do to fix those? But almost more importantly is asking for that feedback from them as far as how you or your team can operate better as well. It's a, you know, it's definitely a two-way street, and a lot of times it's I think that gets lost, and it shouldn't. And you know, especially that as capacities tighten, holidays near, you know, your expectation overall is that your partners are going to help you out, but you know, you need to put in the work before you get to that point, so they understand that there is that partnership. And you know, one of the questions that I always try to ask, or that our teams always try to ask, is that, you know, have you done enough so that at the end, you know, at 4:30 on a Friday, if you've got a load and you call a carrier and that carrier has one truck and they've been offered two loads, have you done everything that you could so that they take your load ahead of someone else's? And the only way to get there is to continue to focus on, you know, making sure that you're giving your carriers a voice as well, and that you know, you're holding them accountable. You have the data, you have the visibility, but it's more than just, you know, holding their feet to the fire, I guess.
Right. And I think these days, you know, they also have the data too, and they've got a lot of, you know, shipper scorecards, right? So yeah, they can, you know, like you said, it's a two-way street. It's a, you know, it's a relationship. And, you know, so it's not only the carriers meeting their commitments and their, you know, the expectations that you have set up for them, you know, are you meeting the expectations that you set up for your carriers? And I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning too, because I would think that one of those steps early on at the beginning of the process was really defining, number one, the metrics that are going to serve as the, you know, framework or the guiding post to, you know, be able to manage the relationships, you know, moving forward after, you know, the engagement, procurement engagement is done. So one is really understanding, you know, do you have the right metrics in place? What should those metrics be? And then, you know, secondly is having, you know, predefined, you know, how are you going to, you know, manage the relationships? How are you going to drive continuous improvement, you know, moving forward, right? And have those processes defined, have who's going to be responsible defined. I mean, do you see that as part of the pre-planning as well, metrics and defining who and how the relationship's going to be managed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that all typically flows into, you know, a strategy as far as, you know, one, understanding ahead of time which reports and data sets you're going to use to understand whether folks are living up to their commitments or not. But then two, from an overall strategy standpoint, it can be, you know, based on who your core carriers are, your niche carriers are, your national carriers are, which brokers you're working with. At times it's just categorizing who those folks are, and then determining kind of what that meeting cadence looks like. What are the expectations by group if it does differ? So there's a lot that goes into it ahead of time. And the more that you can do ahead of time, the better you'll be, because if you all of a sudden try to start putting what that cadence looks like, or you start putting that strategy in place after you've already awarded your freight, you know, you might have a month of missed opportunity before you get the structure in place to really start working with and managing those relationships and those commitments. So absolutely.
Great. So, you know, we're running short on time here, so I just have a couple of more questions, Tim. So let's take everything back to kind of those three ingredients in the title, right? Loyalty, partnership, and collaboration. I mean, how do those ingredients get infused throughout the whole process here?
Well, they're critical to every component. You know, as I mentioned before, it's a relationship business, and you know, you need to put a premium on those folks that are loyal to you. And you know, you need to be loyal yourself. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago I was at a conference and, you know, they had a carrier panel and, you know, the carriers reminded everybody that, you know, years ago, the last time the market turned, you know, a few years back, you know, and all of a sudden they weren't seeing the freight that they'd always seen because they lost all their freight to, you know, to low rated carriers. They remember that. So, you know, I think that's been one of the most encouraging things this past year or so, is that as I've been witnessing, you know, a lot of the shippers that we work with, you know, as they've been going through that procurement process, you know, it's been fantastic to see folks taking more of that long-term approach versus just trying to save every penny that they can. And like I mentioned before, at times leaving money on the table. So loyalty, partnership, collaboration, it occurs at every level. It's critical. And, you know, I guess the big takeaway is that, you know, the loyalty, the partnership, and the collaboration it can't only be the thing that you as the shipper is looking for or asking of your partners, but it really is kind of goes back to it being a two-way street. And, you know, you've got to continue to give people the voice at all levels just to make sure that you're working together to make, if you're the more successful that your partners are, the more successful you'll be. And the only way you're going to get there is if you listen to each other and have those candid conversations.
You know, something you said there kind of, strikes me as interesting. One is, I think it's very encouraging, as you said, that shippers are kind of taking that longer term, view and perhaps are even leaving some money on the table in the spirit of knowing that, it's not all about going to the lowest cost, carrier, because there's value in working with incumbents. There might be some other things that a carrier is providing that, is worthy paying them a slightly higher rate, right? But I think the challenge then becomes, going back to loyalty, collaboration, partnership, that has to also be true internally, right? Because, you may have a CEO, a CFO that says, no, you've got to, that has a mandate that says every department has to try to cut costs by 10% next year. And, you've got to be able to then build the business case or make the case as to why, we're not going to be at that level because of X, Y, and Z, right? So you have to kind of be able to make that case internally as well. Do you see that, particularly with those shippers that are taking that more longer-term strategic view and not looking to kind of, squeeze every penny out of the carriers?
Yeah, no, I do. I think from an award standpoint, it's important. I think that really goes into that overall methodology. But, I think the point you made was, was excellent, that, it's loyalty, partnership, collaboration. And as I mentioned, and as I spoke of it, I was spoken more so on that relationship between the shipper and the carrier. But you're right. It's internal as well. And for those folks that are getting that mandate that every department needs to shave, 10%, if I'm in the transportation department, I might be able to say, well, yeah, we can shave some money by cutting detention costs. But in order to cut detention costs, you need to be able to collaborate with the warehouse to understand what their processes are. So it's difficult to try to cut those costs and to continue to be more efficient without having other stakeholders within your organization that are part of the overall solve. Definitely. I mean, that loyalty, partnership, collaboration, we're talking in it, or I was speaking of it from a pure transportation standpoint, but it's everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's that internal collaboration that's the harder of the two to achieve, which is always ironic. So Tim, as a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions should, companies ask themselves to determine if, they have all of the right ingredients to achieve transportation procurement success?
Yeah, I think some of the main questions to ask yourself is, how am I to work with? What are my carriers saying about me? So again, whether that be, leveraging those relationships and having candid conversations with those folks, or whether it's, doing some sort of a blind survey just so you can understand, how you are to work with, and if you focus in that area, not only will you see better results from a costing standpoint, but as capacity tightens up too, you'll see folks that are still there for you when you need it. As I mentioned in the beginning, am I including the appropriate folks in the process? So am I talking to my system administrator? Am I making sure that all my nuances are documented by speaking with the operators? Do I have processes in place to understand, whether my awards are being followed? So again, do you have that structure? Do you have that process in place to make sure or to monitor whether your loads are being accepted by the folks that you want them to be accepted by? And then also, do you have that cadence set up to be speaking with your partners to ensure that, both partners are doing everything that they can in order for all to be successful. And I think lastly too is, and it kind of goes from the beginning is, from the beginning, do I have a clear strategy? Do I understand, what I want my overall procurement cadence to be? Do I have an overall understanding as far as, what I want that final outcome to be based on the demographics of the carrier? It really kind of comes back to them, because the more buttoned up that you are, you're in a better position to make sure that those expectations are known internally and externally. And I think if that's clear, everybody can at least start marching towards what that strategy is. Because the worst thing that you can ever do is, you know, to have a carrier in this example, have a carrier think they're doing a great job, and the next thing they know is there's freight being taken away from because, you know, someone else doesn't see it that way. So the more that you have that strategy to communicate, to provide data, to talk, you can try to eliminate or erase the surprises, because at the end of the day, surprises are great if it's your birthday, but you don't need a surprise. You don't want a surprise necessarily when you're at work, or your carriers definitely don't want to be surprised as well. So the more transparent, and the more that you can make sure that you're effectively communicating and giving everybody the tools that they need to be successful, the better off you'll be.
No, all great points. I mean, you mentioned before that this is a relationship business, and that's so true. And like any relationship, you want to have ongoing and clear and honest communication with one another, and that ultimately builds that trust and strengthens the relationship over time. Well, Tim, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, we always just manage to scratch the surface on these topics. But once again, I think you provided some great insight and advice, so for companies to think about as they, move forward, either starting their procurement engagement or, as they move forward afterwards. So thank you very much for making the time.
Yeah, no, and like I said at the beginning, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
I want to thank those of you that joined us today. We didn't get any questions, but if you've got any questions for Tim and you're watching this episode on demand, either on the Talking Logistics website or the Lean Logistics website, you can post a question or comment there, and I'm sure Tim will be more than happy to answer via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.